Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Our buddy George Mahey is here from St. Louis Magazine. I just learned some George Mahey trivia, which is fascinating. His daughter is a shoe designer. I think that's so cool.
We're talking about shoes.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And she was just she was a design student at Mizzou. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen with those things. And then she ends up being a shoe designer. Now she's a senior shoe designer. So she's, you know, she'll show me a pair of shoes and she goes, those are mine.
That's great.
I designed those. We did that.
Well, I want to have her on the show for real.
Okay.
And the first thing I will ask her is the same question I asked when I was at a wine dinner with a winemaker from the oldest family winery in the States.
Okay.
And I said, how much money, apropos of like Screaming Eagle and stuff like that, how much money can you actually put into a bottle of wine? And without hesitating, he said, $50. He said, anyone who tells you they have more than that in it, outside of marketing and stuff, other than that, it's hype.
Regardless. Of the price.
Yes.
Whether it's a $50, so these, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, wines really take their, a lot of it is just, reputation, and they're riding on their laurels, and, you know, you drink some Camus and you're almost predisposed to go, boy, this is really good, isn't it? This is really good wine. And it, you know, if you, that, you have you ever gone into these blind testings where they'll put five wines out and some could be $10 wines and some could be $100. That's how you put it, the old brown bag trick.
Yeah.
I've learned so much and it's humbled me so much. Yeah. Like, oh, I can tell those expensive. No, you can't half the time. Just deal with it.
I think
the experienced palates can, but most of us can't.
And I was telling someone the other day, a mutual friend of ours, that I go back to when you and I were judges at the soup competition for like 5 years in a row.
Yep.
And
Soup's on.
And it would be like 40, 50 soups. And I don't know about you, but after about 20, I couldn't tell a difference.
No.
I mean, for real, your taster
gets... this chicken or beef? I have no idea.
It tastes like soup.
Yeah. Like, I took it really seriously, and I'm marking down my scores, and I'm making notes. And by soup 21, it's just hot liquid.
Yeah. And, yeah, you know, we're the professional judges, so we couldn't, like, let on that we felt this way.
Yeah, no.
But, no, it was... That was fun, though. It really was. And, I'm surprised there aren't more soup competitions, really. That was the only one. It was called Soups On. It went on for years and years. I don't think they do it anymore. I think since COVID, I think that thing went away. But that's something I suggested that the magazine do. You know, let's do this in the middle of February, just like that thing. Nobody's doing anything anyway. Let's go have a soup competition. So
maybe I'm officially old now by saying this.
You like soup.
I love soup. I was just saying, I wish you would come in here and go like, guess what? Gerard Kraft's opening up the lettuce leaf again.
Yes.
I would love that.
Yeah, you'd invest in it.
I would.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm going to bring you some soup next time.
Okay.
I make soup at home, and it's so good, and everybody tells me it's good, so I know it's not just you know,
what
puffery.
What kind of soup is it?
It's a seafood soup. Okay. I make my own seafood base, and I save every shell and every, you know, we eat a lot of seafood. So I save all this stuff, and when the freezer gets officially just too full, my wife goes, it's time to make stock. And so I make the seafood stock, and that can stay for a while. But anyway, that's the secret, is doing your own stock. And this is good soup.
How long does that take to make a stock?
4 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just freeze it, and then you can make the soup whenever you want. But
what else do you make at home? Do you cook mostly, or do you and Susie sort of?
Kind of half and half.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a pretty basic guy, you know, just I buy a lot of fresh fish and do it simply, you know, grill it, saute it, bread it. I'm not a very complicated guy, you know, cook a lot of chicken dishes. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of guys that you talk to, even that can cook, we just like, we don't get into fancy schmancy stuff every night.
That surprised me, knowing a few chefs, you'd think they'd be having coq au vin every night.
No, they like a basic chicken, or, you know, they go out and you'll see them in the Taco Bell line, you know, along with the rest of us.
Yeah.
And that's what they're just average and normal people. That's what you find out about a lot of these guys. They've got a good palate and they can cook, but that's kind of, it's kind of like, you know, it's like going to work when you've got to, you know, I'm going to cook fancy at home. I do that all day long. I'm going to go home and eat some
pork. Also, Taco Bell is fancy food.
What's that?
That proves Taco Bell's fancy food.
Yeah.
I've been trying to argue that for decades.
Sounds like a tagline.
Yeah. Fancy food, Taco Bell. Don't. You're going to play the bell? Bing.
That would appeal.
Good
Taco
stuff.
Bell. No, Sue broke it.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
that's funny. You hit that bell and nothing
try
happened.
It again. Try it again.
Oh, there it is. There okay. You go.
All right. I was nervous. For a second there, I thought, no way.
I thought you were going to knock your drink over again.
Again. And I spilled my drink everywhere. I go all the way back with the spills. That was my first trouble with my dad. He hated spills.
Oh, the spills, yeah.
People must have spilled on him in the Philippines in World War II because he held a grudge.
Are you a good spiller? I'm a really good spiller.
I'm
at a restaurant?
I'm a proficient spiller.
I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wait till the water's completely filled
and
up.
Then
it has to go. Yeah. Not the empty glass. No, it has to be that
my
way.
My worst spill ever was I was at my buddy Dan Sturman's wedding in Houston. Big, beautiful, rich people affair. And I was a groomsman, and I had picked out the bridesmaid I was going to hit on, and she was sitting next to me at the table wearing this beautiful white dress or whatever, ivory, and I had a big glass of red wine. It was like my third, and I'm like, so let's get right into me. And all over the dress.
Oh,
red wine ruined right it. Down the dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she have to go and get another dress or what?
I didn't see her much after that.
They kept Dave away from
her. Yeah.
I was wooing a woman one time, and I was out with her father for the first time, a very conservative banker, and we were at a nice place. And there was a wine bucket, you know, and they fill those things up with water and ice. And, you know, it's a couple gallon affair. And I'm doing this, you know, I'm
home
telling
court,
this story, and I've got my arms waving, and I do one of these things, and this wine. All the way. I mean, there was water and ice, and for the entire meal, the whole staff was coming by and slipping and falling. And you couldn't get this much water up. It was on a carpet, and
yes.
They just couldn't. It just didn't happen. So the whole. It's just not like you do it and they clean it up and it's over. Oh no, this was the gift that kept on giving. And
looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
And this guy's like, who is this idiot? You know?
I was at a country club once with my girlfriend and her family. Reminds me of that story. And I had long hair and earrings, and I'm just waiting for a fight. I'm spoiling for a fight. And I went in the bathroom, and I came out, and there were a bunch of people staring at me. And I was ready to say, like, oh, what is it? You don't know what a rocker looks like? And my pants were undone.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're staring at.
It could have been toilet paper on the shoe, too. Mm-hmm. That's usually good for one of those.
Yep.
That'll humble you, won't it, Mr. Yeah. Mr. Oh, yeah. Fancy Boy?
Sure does. Sure does. So what are we talking today? A little tipping?
Well, let's talk. Yeah, tipping. It's just, I don't know what your kind of go-to subject here is, but tipping is mine. I mean, that or Provel cheese. Everybody likes to weigh in on both of those. But we're talking about, I don't know how I got onto this, but, you know, when people tip, you know, when the service is bad, you tend to tip less. There's nothing wrong with that. I do it. You do it. That's just kind of what you do. That's how this whole thing is measured. But when it gets down to the point that you're so mad that you're going to leave a zero tip, you know, and people do that. Like, that's it. I'm gonna take a stand here. This is it. That's not a good thing to do for this reason, because a lot of the times people think, wait, he left a zero tip. That's a, you know, he didn't mean to do that. You know, this is an oversight, or he does it every time. You don't really know, but you know, I maintain that if you're going to leave a zero tip, then clue the manager in, even if it's the next day.
That's,
I know,
a good
we've
point.
You and I have talked about this. I know you're not a confrontational. No, I'm not going to do it, but have somebody else, you know, call him or email him or text him and just say, hey, I left a zero tip, or I left a 10% tip.
Yeah.
People ask me, you've asked me this before, what's the absolute rock bottom tip that you leave even when you're just upset? And my answer is a 10% tip to me is like a high offense.
Making a point.
I won't. Yeah, but people don't know that. They go, but that old geezer just tips 10%. That's just the way it is. So you need to kind of you know, verify and substantiate what you're doing, or this will continue to happen.
When
you know,
that happens,
that's the whole point. It's just, you have to stop it. You have to put an end to it, or the next guy's going to have the same fate.
So when you got that call as a restaurant owner, what was your next step?
As far as, I'd call the server in and just say, let's go over this. Exactly what happened. And, you know, there's two sides to every story. The guy could have been a complete jerk.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't want to wait on him anyway. I almost walked out on him. You know, you just don't know what it is. But yeah, but sure, it's invaluable information, because you get a couple of those and you go, there must be a point here. If two people have said it, then there's probably some truth to the matter.
You know, I think this is no genius take, but I think that the iPad tipping at every store and good and service out there now has probably hurt restaurant tipping, because we don't tip as much, and sometimes 20% is the highest. So I think we have tipping fatigue, and the bar has been lowered by that.
We do have tipping fatigue, but the bar's been raised. The tips are higher since the advent of it. Yeah, because we're shamed. It's tip shaming. Yeah. We're shamed into it, and you see this. It used to be, you know, 10, 15, 20, and now it's 20, 25, 30, and you go, and you'd never tip 25 before, but you go, I better go in the middle here, that's safe. Yeah. And it's 25%, and you've just bought a bagel. Mm-hmm. It's just, the whole thing is wrong in so many ways. But yeah, it's, tipping has increased since the advent of those iPads, which is... Tip before anybody waits on you. Tip before anything happens. Just throw us some money here. It's so wrong.
Some of it, though, depending on the size of the ticket, right? I mean, depending on where you're going, seeing that breakdown and going, oh man, the difference between 20 and 25% on this thing is $1.40.
Big deal. Yeah.
I'm going to go for the $1.40 because it's, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's not so much a guilt thing. It's like, okay, it's just not that much money. And as opposed to the principle of 20 versus 25.
In most cases, it's like that. There really isn't that big a difference. So, you know, just go on the high side. And, you know, I'm always been, obviously in the business, I've been a good tipper. But, and they do remember, you know, they can even chronicle, you know, if you're a notoriously bad tipper, a notorious jerk, or you like Pinot Noir or whatever it is, that can go on your little profile when you're making a reservation.
No tipping pimping. We had that at the restaurant I worked at in Chicago. Scottie Pippen came in. He never tipped. Nobody wanted us to wait on him.
Yeah, what about that? Do you just take turns waiting on the bad table?
Yeah. And no, I got him last time. And then the only way to do that, we drew straws. It's like, hey, that, you know, no, you did have them. You know, nobody would believe anybody, because we all had them last time. So they would we would draw straws, or the notorious jerks, or there's always a couple guys that's like, oh God, here they come, and you just want to go crawl in a hole.
Yeah.
But yeah, the good old restaurant business. I do love it.
Well, we're talking about you know, Phoebe and what she's going to do for a living, and she has an opportunity to work at a law firm this summer, and I want her to do it just so she can get her feet wet, get a look at the corporate world. And you were saying that everyone, and I completely wholeheartedly agree, everyone should work in the restaurant industry.
For even if it's a small amount of time, and not just the restaurant industry, but if you can, get behind the double doors, get into the kitchen, either cook or expedite or even a server, because the servers, then you see both sides. Because if you're just out on the floor as a busser or a host, it's still pretty fun and everybody's smiling and having a good time. Walk behind those double doors and you see where the action is. And I've done that to a lot of people. And they said, I've worked at this place for a month and that's it. That's all I needed. I'm out. Yeah. I wanted no part of it. Or it's just the opposite. I fed on the mayhem.
And Nick did it for years with Jeff Dill and almost got sucked in where, like, that was going to be it.
I got sucked in.
Yeah.
When I was about his age.
It happens.
And here I am.
All right. Thank you, George. Happy Friday. Going to be a little different weather weekend than we thought earlier in the week when it was looking like it was sunny and 75. And I bought my tickets to the Cardinals game on Sunday. Although I'm still excited about it. It looks like it's going to be kind of like it is right now, but a little more rain, a little more cool, a little more London foggish. So enjoy. It'll be hot as balls soon. So.
Soon enough, yeah.
Let's do a little preview of Rush Hour. Let's talk about both the Blues and the Cardinals if you can.
Yeah, well, we won't do Blues on the Rush Hour, so you might as well do it now.
Yeah.
Because the Rush Hour is about getting ready for Cardinals and pregame stuff. But as far as the Blues side goes, what we talked about with Bernie, I think, is one of the most interesting things is watch the line changes and how Jim Montgomery works to get the matchups that he wants on home ice. Because at home, there are a couple of advantages that usually they're not like game changers all the time. Sometimes they don't matter at all. But having the last change, so having the choice of seeing, okay, they had to put their lineup out there before us, we can match that
can
now.
Can you flesh this out? I didn't know about this.
Yeah, so the home team in hockey doesn't have to put their players on the ice for each time the whistle blows, right? Every time you change, like this is when on stoppages, not on live. Live, you can just change and try to match up any way you want. But especially important when you are having face-offs in either your offensive or defensive zone. Right, if you have a faceoff in your defensive zone and the other team puts out their number one unit, which is usually their best offensive line, you want a good matchup for that. Whatever you think your best matchup for that is. Maybe it's your third line. Maybe it's your top line. And it also goes with which defenseman you want to get out there. Which defensive pairing do you want? So on home ice, you get to make that choice second. So that's an advantage because you can then play that matchup. And again, it doesn't always matter. But it's mattered every game in this series. So it's not a...
Is that a playoff thing or is that an all-year thing?
It's true always, but it's a bigger deal in the playoffs because you're seeing the same team every day, right? In a season, you're seeing a team and then you're not seeing them again for a while, except in those rare cases where you'll have like a back-to-back where you play one game Friday, one game Sunday or Saturday or whatever. But in the playoffs, you're seeing them every day. So you're in on that team and you're really focused on that team, not just for one game, but for, you know, do or die 7-game series. So those things matter more in that setting than they would in the regular season. And then even something as simple as where your bench is closer to your defensive zone when you're at home. Two out of the three periods. So that helps you if you want to make a quicker change and not put yourself in a bad defensive position. Again, these are minor things. They're not always a big deal. They can be non-factors completely. But especially being able to match on the stoppages is a big deal for the Blues. And I think Bernie nailed it. The Blues have to focus on creating that traffic in front of Hellebuck. And it's funny. It's one of the oldest hockey sayings in the world, right? Get traffic in front of the net. It's always a thing. And when teams aren't going well, they'll always say, we got to get more traffic in front of the net. So it's one of the most basic things in the world, but it's particularly effective against this goaltender. So you combine, you know, and also I would throw onto this that home ice matters a good bit in the postseason too because of atmosphere and noise and things along those lines. So it's, again, not be all end all because if Winnipeg comes out and scores 3 goals in the first period and they're up 3-0, the crowd's going to quiet down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can have an impact on that, but the deeper the game goes and the closer it is, the more those things kind of take shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you got the goalie factor. What's Binnington look like tonight? If he's on fire, because he's the guy that can steal games. If he's on his game, that by itself can be something that swings an outcome. Even if the guys around him aren't making the right plays, and they typically do. As far as the weekend for baseball, it's interesting. So the Cardinals just made a couple moves today. They sent down Riley O'Brien and Matt Swanson, and they brought up Rodri Munoz, who wasn't very good last time he was here, and they brought back Chris Roycroft, and that's a guy we're going to talk about today. Matt Pauly talked to him today and some interesting stuff about what they did at Memphis to fix his best pitch. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye on that and see how he's used.
It's Happy Friday. Since we have access to a Kevin Wheeler and we have the Mets for the weekend, let's drill down a little more on the Cardinals. I really do value you and Pauly and all the guys because I come at this as a fan. I am not an expert. I'm not educated like you guys, and I love learning about the game. My intuition is that whatever Lucan Baker is here to do, he's not doing.
That's a good intuition. That's a good intuition. That would be accurate. There's not much happening. Now, look, it's hard to adapt to being a guy that never plays.
Sure.
When you're a guy who's played every day all your life.
Yeah.
So that may be part of what we're seeing with Baker, which is learning how to do this job, which is to play once or twice a week. And pinch hit here or there.
And even just being a DH, like you and Pauly talked a lot about who the DH should be or what the DH should be. And if you tell me, and Pauly made the point that we really haven't had one since Pujols.
Yeah.
But if you tell me, you're going to have three or four chances a game, tops, to show that you're worth these millions of dollars, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I mean, that's
they're big leaguers.
Right. And look, I think every guy's different, which is why it's hard for me to ever fall into whether this is somebody struggling because of that or not. Some guys are perfectly fine with it. Other guys might not be. And it just depends on the person. You can't make a general statement about DHing being easier or harder. It's physically easier. And for some guys who maybe in between at bats want to go into the cage under the tunnels and take a few hacks and maybe look at some video or something along those lines. I mean, there are the guys that can do handle those things. But that's why it's harder. But most importantly, since Albert took that job and ran with it in the second half of his final year here, they just haven't had somebody really hitting well enough to be good in that spot, period. Gorman struggled a lot in that period last year, so he would have been a problem in that role. They've been cycling guys in and out. And this year, I'm actually going to bring this up because Bernie's going to join us today, too, on the Redbird Rush Hour. So you'll hear it first. Here's your sneak preview. I'm going to ask whether or not Ivan Herrera should take Baker's spot on the roster when he comes back and keep three catchers and have Herrera be the DH.
Okay.
And have the other two and catch a little bit, but have the other two guys as the tandem to catch.
Okay.
Because Pozo's done a pretty good job and he's taken some good at bats. Mm-hmm. Pajes is not a great hitter, but he's your best defensive catcher.
Yeah.
So you may be able to get the best of all worlds doing it that way. Now, I'm guessing that it'll be Pozo going down. And to be fair to Lucan Baker, he has hit lefties. He's not hit for power against lefties. That's the big concern. But, I mean, he's well above league average against left-handed pitching. 770 OPS. He's hitting 269. League average against lefties, probably 240. So he's done okay in that role. He just hasn't brought the power.
And you've fallen a little out of love with Burleson.
It's not so much falling out of love. Boy, are you reading my notes? Because this is also on the show today.
I'm a fan.
I mean, literally, this is on there for a segment today. But it's building off what Bernie said earlier, right? It's not about not being a fan of his. I think the guy's a good player, and I think he's a good hitter, and there's a role for him on any major league team and maybe a starting role on a lot of teams. But he's a big guy who doesn't bring defensive quality. And he's not hitting for power. Now, he hit 21 homers last year, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
He's hit 4 home runs since the All-Star break last year.
Wow.
So that's the end of July, August, September, and then now the first month of this season, only 4 home runs. And he's only hitting .240 during that time, and he's not hitting doubles either. So it's like, when his slugging, and I'm not going to bore you guys too much with nerdy numbers, but it's roughly a .310 slugging percentage since the All-Star break of last year, and that's well over 300 at-bats. That's a guy who's a big guy, supposed to be bringing you extra base power, not doing that. So it's not so much down on him, it's just that if we're going to err on the side of giving DH at-bats to somebody, it should be somebody that's got a little bit more upside. And he's 26. He's a very, again, I think he's a good hitter who will eventually hit some more. But if you're going to err on the side of which guy I want to see get those at-bats, I want it to be Gorman. Because Gorman, at least we know, has 30 home run ability. Hit 27 in 75% of a season just a year ago. Mm-hmm. So You know, and that's why I'm also making the asking the question about Ivan Herrera. He's coming back soon. He's catching today, and he'll be back soon. When he's back, he should never come out of the lineup. If he's not catching, he needs to be your DH, which obviously ties into both Gorman and Burleson. So it'd be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So here you go, sneak preview.
I like it. I like everything about it.
And you stole my notes.
I think Dave is stalking you, and this was just our way of finding out.
Yeah.
Shush.
All right. I kind of knew that. I tell you-